Have you been told? Did you ever hear of the curious, furious, fidgety year when Santa Claus unhitched his sleigh and vowed he was taking a holiday? How do I know so much about Santa? Well, I'm Mrs. Claus. It was long ago, before you were living. Not yet Christmas, but past Thanksgiving, though I can't give you the very date. Santa got up that morning late, pulled on one boot and then its twin, ruffled the whiskers on his chin, and sat back down on the side of the bed.
Great North Star, but I'm tired,
he said.
Painting wagons red and bright, sharpening ice skates half the night, wrapping presents in ribbons and gauze, has worn me weary,
said Santa Claus.
Crick in my back, cold in my nose, aches in my fingers and all 10 toes, and a sort of kind of kink inside whenever I think of that Christmas ride.
Now, Santa, you just rest yourself a bit longer. I've already sent for the doctor. We'll have you back on your feet in no time.
No wonder you got the shiver and shakes. Probably never got over the case of near pneumonia you picked up last year gallivanting around the world in your open sleigh. And for what? Just to deliver presents to a bunch of folks who don't give a hoot in the first place.
Now,
Doctor, it's not just presents, and you know it. What about all that Christmas spirit and goodwill?
If you had any sense, you'd give it up as a bad job and stay home in bed this year.
Oh, come now. If Santa stayed home, why, there'd be no Christmas.
Who cares? Nobody cares about Christmas anymore.
They don't.
Of course not. Wouldn't surprise me none if nobody even believes in you anymore.
Now, Santa, don't you pay him any mind.
Nobody cares a hoot and holler for you or Christmas. Oh, by the way, Merry Christmas to you.
Now, Santa, I hope you're not going to take any of that to heart.
No, Ma, the man's right. I had that same feeling myself, but I just wouldn't admit it. Nobody really cares anymore. And besides, the doctor says I'm really not up to snuff. Besides, I'm due for a holiday. I better call the boys and tell them to cancel Christmas.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Mr. White Christmas, Mr. Snow, Mr. 30 Below, Jason Bishop, and welcome to the show, Mrs. Claus. Oh, wait, Mrs. Stepanenko. Val, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me
Stepping
today.
Stepping in for Trish today, and of course, our favorite elf.
I ain't no elf. I'm a Grinch.
Sam Stepanenko.
Hello. Bah humbug.
You're the doctor who like tries to tell Santa Claus that Christmas is worthless.
I mean, not that bad, but pretty close. I'm totally a Grinch.
Yeah, so today we're going to venture into the realm of television. Don't worry, we're not going to make a habit of this. We are going to be talking about the classic special from Rankin and Bass, The Year Without a Santa Claus from 1974. And believe it or not, they did a live-action remake in 2006 by director Ron Underwood, who's actually a pretty good director. He directed City Slickers and Tremors. Most Ooh. Of the Tremors movies he had something to do with. But
yeah. So I mean, he's not a terrible director.
No.
And I mean, this isn't terribly directed either.
No, I mean, you can tell nobody's putting in maximum effort in this thing because it is a TV movie.
Special.
Yeah, you know, some. I think both of these were ran on ABC, so they're Disney properties. And this remake was so well loved, it was damn near impossible to find.
Damn near, yes.
I have a feeling they're trying to bury it, but it's got a good cast.
It's a shame because it's not. It's a decent Christmas film. It's not a great Christmas film, but it's a decent one. I really have to admit, I kind of enjoyed watching it. I found it to be kind of fun and lighthearted.
It took me about halfway before I started kind of getting into it a little bit because the first bit was, I thought, was just nauseating.
A little bit, but it's a Christmas movie. You have to sort of expect some sappy nauseous.
Oh, I don't mind the sappy Christmas stuff. It is just the horrible character of Chris Kattan just put me in a bad mood.
I can see that. Right? And if this movie has one really glaring flaw, it is that whole story arc.
Yeah. I mean, you're taking a 50-minute stop-motion animated film and blowing it up to fill a two-hour spot. So it would have been about hour 45. What was the runtime on that? Hour. About 85 minutes, yeah.
Well, and I mean, you're taking what is probably the weakest of the Rankin Bass movies in my mind.
You know, in my mind, like, when I was thinking back on this, I'm like, oh, I think I love this one. I don't.
No.
I mean, I really like the two misers, but they don't get a lot of screen time in here.
No, they don't. But everybody liked them so much, they got their own special.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So yeah, that explains an awful lot because it wasn't it was by far their weakest work.
Yeah.
Was the 2006 movie, was it released on DVD?
Yes,
as far as I can tell, yeah, it was, yeah.
So it was something that you could actually purchase and take home and watch over and over again.
Yeah, but trying to find a 12-year-old DVD was it was even harder, and not even iTunes has this thing. We had to go digging deep.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But we managed it.
Yeah.
There's lots to like in the remake, but just because they filled in the gaps in the Rankin Bass version. At least I felt they did. I mean, they gave the characters more character. Like, all of them.
Well, and they did modernize them, and in a way, like, they're very different characters, even though the structure of the film's similar.
Yeah.
They're just trying to make it more, I don't know, identifiable to a modern audience and hip for kids, I guess. Like, there's some stuff that's obviously trying to play on weird remake tropes of, we gotta go extreme.
Yeah.
We need extreme Santa.
Yeah, I mean, this movie felt very self-aware. I mean, even the extreme Santa felt self-aware, as annoying as the story
is. It concentrates a lot on the commercialization of Christmas.
It really does.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a subtle commentary at all.
No, unlike the original movie, the original special, because they took the subtext of that original special and just blew it right up into
but the acting was good.
Yes,
like the acting didn't suck in it.
It was solid for like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a really solid cast in that remake with John Goodman, Chris Kattan, Ethan Suplee. I mean, Chris Kattan, we talked about, and do you remember?
Taxi. House on Haunted Hill. I remember the episode.
Oh, House on. Yeah, you know what? I forgot to write that down. But Taxi remake.
Oh, yeah.
Delta Burke.
And we talked about John Goodman just recently for episode 162, Chud. Ethan Suplee is very familiar to Kevin Smith fans.
Yes.
He was in Clerks, Dogma, Chasing Amy, all sorts of Kevin Smith stuff. Dylan Minnette, we talked about in episode 28.
Episode 28. I wasn't even here for episode 28. I can't remember that.
Let Me In. It was Let Me In.
Okay.
The remake of Let the Right
One. Oh, I knew that because I was reading up on him because he's also in 13 Reasons Why. I'm like, I know this kid. And then I looked back. I'm like, holy shit, that's the kid from 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah. Eddie Griffin, who plays Jingle, he was most recently was in the remake of A Star Is Born. Which we haven't seen yet, so we'll cover it somewhere, sometime.
Yeah, that's going to be a two-part episode.
Yeah, because there's a few of them.
Yeah.
Delta Burke is also in this as Mrs. Mm-hmm. Claus, but her role is really downplayed from the original film, where she's, for the most part, a big catalyst, and she's the one that goes to see the misers and tries to convince them.
And she was the one that was really excited to play Santa Claus for a day.
Yeah, which didn't actually happen.
Got Santa Claus' outfit on there and everything, and yeah, I'm going to be the man today.
You know, I couldn't remember this thing very well, and I actually thought she got to do that, and No, she just was cross-dressing in Santa's clothes.
Yeah. Well, this is the second movie in a row that we've done where the title really isn't true.
Yeah.
Right? Because they did get Santa Claus. So it was almost the year without Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Then, of course, we talk about Jared Sin did not get destructed. Yes. And I know I said that incorrectly. I did it on purpose. Just in case you didn't notice.
There was no destruction of Jared Sin.
There wasn't very much from one Mrs. Claus to the next Mrs. Claus, but at the very end of the 2006 movie, Delta Burke is driving the sleigh.
That's true. I mean, she does get her moments. I think she's quite good in the film, but given her notorious reputation of being difficult to work with, I guess they just downplayed her role.
That's possible. She
ended
very
up more on the cutting room floor.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they just didn't shoot it. She wouldn't come out of her trailer unless she got to drive Santa's sleigh. Harvey Fierstein is the heat miser. Michael McKean is the snow miser. And their mother, Mother Nature, is Carol Kane. And Carol Kane, you know her from Princess Bride and Scrooge. Michael McKean, you know him from Spinal Tap and her most recently Better Call Saul.
And every Christopher Guest film.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And Val and I were watching this, one of the comments that Val made was, wow, it's the same character she played in Scrooge. And then, of course, the comment is Carol Kane has made a career of playing the same character over and over and
it
over
is.
Again. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a lot of range, but she sure is fun to watch.
Yeah, I've got a clip of her later on here.
Wasn't Carol Kane in The Jerk?
I don't remember The Jerk, so I don't remember.
Was that Carol
Kane? No, that was Bernadette Peters.
That was Bernadette Peters. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah. I don't know why I always get those two mixed up.
I know. She was curly hair, whiny voice.
Curly hair, whiny voices, right?
Yeah. She was the Penguin's mom, I do believe, on Gotham recently.
I don't know. I actually haven't watched that.
Carol Kane or Bernadette Peters?
Carol Kane. Yeah.
So. She'd be good in that role.
Yeah, yeah.
She's so sweet, but she always has this edge of evil in everything that she does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The original voice cast is actually pretty good, too. Shirley Booth, most people would know her from A Touch of Grace. She was Mrs. Santa Claus, and this was her last role before she retired. Mickey Rooney from Breakfast and Tiffany's, and our newer audience would know him as a little old dude from Night at the Museum. Dick Shawn was the Snow Miser. He's actually got a Batman and Robin credit, speaking of Batman and Robin, as the same character.
There we go.
So I think they just ran a clip from the movie, but it was fun to see him credited for the same role.
Twice
for Batman and Robin. George S. Irving is Heat Miser. Bob McFadden was Jingle Bells, and most people would know him as a voice from Thundercats. Rhoda Mann was Mother Nature. Bradley Bulk was Jangles. Colin Duffy was Ignatius Thistlewhistle. I just wanted to say that out loud.
Which was the father, right? Or the mayor?
No, that's the kid. Yeah.
That was the kid. Iggy Ignatius.
Yeah. Okay. That was a fundamental change because his father was just one of the denizens of Southtown in the original film, and they had gone to see the mayor to free Vixen.
Yeah.
From the pound.
I am so glad they ditched that for the remake. I really am. That would have been kind of fun as a kid in the 70s, but even now, like an 8-year-old now would be going, that's just stupid.
Yeah. But, you know, in exchange for letting it snow in Snowtown, because, you know, the mayor's a dick, if you can make it snow in Southtown, yeah, I'll release Vixen. What? You're an asshole. Okay, so that starts this whole pointless crusade to talk to the misers and get them to agree to stop fighting and so they can exchange territories and let it snow in Southtown in exchange for a summer day in the North Pole. In the remake, the mayor is actually the father of Iggy.
Yes.
So there's this whole subplot of
the absentee father.
Exactly.
Misplaced priorities. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a great theme for a Christmas movie.
Sure.
Right? Because it builds up to that reconnect where the father makes that realization that he's not being a good father.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And works to correct it. Like, we'll see how long it lasts, but that's, I mean, very tropey Christmas kind of thing is the person.
Yeah, I was going to say, you see that theme in a lot of Christmas movies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And because it gives families when they're watching it that feel good moment.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, most Christmas movies really concentrate on the importance of family.
Yes. And yeah, this took a long time to get there, but it got there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the mayor's realization comes like in the final 5 minutes of the film.
I mean, he still ditches his son to do his speech, and is halfway through his speech before he makes the freaking realization.
Yeah, he's halfway through his speech looking at his son damn near bawling. Yeah. Wow, I'm a shitheel dad. I need to keep, should I keep going and tell him we're bulldozing the town for a mega mall? maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, that played right into that whole the whole overt story of commercialism and consumerism, right?
Yeah.
So, like, again, that just sort of fed the whole story. It's like, well, yeah, no, let's move away from that and focus on family. Mm-hmm. And again, it ties into the sort of standard tropes, but...
Yeah. I'm going to run a trailer real quick for the original film, and we'll be back right quick, because this is a TV spot, so it's like 20 seconds, so, you know, don't blink.
Sunday, poor Santa's tuckered out.
Nobody really cares anymore.
And all the elves are out of work.
What?
And it will surely be a blue Christmas, unless there's a miracle in the nick of time.
Biff is see?
It's big trouble if it's a year without Santa.
Told you it was quick. One of my favorite bits in the original, and I had to laugh because there's this whole song and Santa's singing this song about himself. I'm like, you egomaniac.
Well, he's the Santa in this movie, in both movies actually, is kind of selfish, more so in the animated version, but certainly both of them are kind of selfish. They're like, well, they don't believe me anymore, and, so I quit.
Yeah, and susceptible to suggestion. He's got this pretty grinchy doctor, and he's just kind of feeling a little low, and he's feeling sick and just wants to stay in bed. So they're telling, and he's like, all right, that's it. I'm going to take the year off, because he was convinced that nobody cared about Christmas or believed in Santa anymore.
Yeah, and nobody at the North Pole was supporting him except for Mrs. Claus.
Yeah.
Right? And nobody that he listened to, right? The doctor was just that final nail in the coffin as far as he was concerned. It's like, well, see, even the doctor doesn't think that there's Christmas anymore.
Yeah. Right? Now, I mean, in the remake, it's a little more, he's getting a little fed up with how commercialized Christmas is, and there's these violent toys. And I mean, in a lot of ways, there's this corporate coup happening with Chris Kattan.
Yeah, and that whole subplot we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, what was his name? Sparky.
Sparky, yes. Also known as Extreme Santa.
Yeah, yeah. He's been planning for this moment for a long time and sowing the seeds. They make this statement that Christmas kind of got taken over by corporations and putting out these big toys and games and stuff during Christmas time. So they kind of took over the game of toys at Christmas, and they're like, well, we need to change our image. And they went all corporate. And I really like the setting of, like, there's this almost Christmas card look to their home and the setting in North Pole. And right next to it is this big building with Santico.
Yeah. Well, and yeah,
still with that Christmas card look.
Yeah, and exactly, it's kind of, and that's what makes this film so much fun to watch, is there's so much juxtaposition all the way through the movie,
right? Yeah, I don't know if it's fun to watch. I didn't like the movie, but
oh, I had a lot of fun watching it. I mean, once we were able to watch it, I rather enjoyed it. I loved the performances by Harvey Firestein and Michael McKean as the Misers.
I love the Misers. They were my favorite part of both of them.
Yeah, it's the only song that's intact. Like, they wiped out the music in the remake for being longer, you know. It would have probably made sense to keep the music intact, because it would have filled the time within the film, and you could have lost some of the weaker subplots. But
they kept the original Miser song,
thankfully,
right?
But that's the most iconic bit in there, right?
And you know,
but even then, they still made a mashup of it.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that Mr. White Christmas song, the only time, like, I don't remember seeing this movie in the 70s when I was a child. I remember Frosty the Snowman. I remember Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
This,
you know,
one didn't
all
get
those
near
little stop-motion
kind of
Christmas movies.
Yeah, this one didn't get near the same kind of play.
And I remember watching Veronica Mars. And it's Christmas time in the Mars household, and they're watching TV together, and you see the I'm Mr. White Christmas, you know, and he's singing the song, and Veronica and her dad are watching it on TV, and I'm like, I don't ever remember seeing the movie when I was a kid that that was in.
I kind of remember, I remembered actually the songs in this, the original special, but I didn't and I kind of remembered what the misers were about, but I didn't remember much about anything else about this film.
I don't remember seeing it when I was a kid.
I think it's just the misers that made the impression on me as a kid.
I think that's pretty typical for me as well, because they're the only things I recognized from the movie while we were watching it. And the whole thing felt really choppy and lacked cohesion to me. It felt like there was more that was supposed, they were trying to do, and it just got all left out. Either they didn't have the budget or they had to cut stuff out.
In the original cartoon?
Yeah. It felt like there was stuff missing.
It just didn't feel, to me, it didn't feel cartoony. It wasn't, to me, it just wasn't colorful enough and fun enough. Maybe that's why I don't remember it as a kid. Maybe I blocked it out.
I don't know. It didn't seem to have the same kind of full story that, Rudolph or even Santa Coming to Town, which was actually the first time Mickey Rooney played Santa Claus for Rankin and Bass. And it just, I don't think it had that fullness of story in it. And sometimes it feels like just, it's meandering. I don't think it was cohesion issues. It was just not quite enough to fill the story,
which is funny because it wasn't even an original script. It was based on a short story.
Yeah, it was based on the story by Phyllis McGinley.
So yeah, it's funny when you have something that's already established as literature, children's literature, but literature nonetheless, and you still can't make something that's cohesive. I've never read the story, so maybe the story itself is lacking that cohesion.
Well, I didn't think it was a lack of cohesion so much as just they were making scenes go longer, and even if anything, man, this thing could have been done in a half hour special and still had the same all the songs in it and could have just sped up some of those scenes, because some of them feel long, like when Jingle and Jangle are flying over the divide and get shot. I'm sure that was in the book, but it's kind of pointless. In neither version did you feel the risk of them falling into the divide in the hands of the misers. There's a brief accident and there's almost a spill, and then they continue on their way to Southtown.
At least in the remake, they made it serve a purpose where Django loses his little portable television.
Yeah.
Right. So, which led to a revelation later on, a small one, but where they find it. And it creates that sense of tension for Sparky and Santa.
Yeah, Jingle and Jangle go on a mission from Mrs. Claus to find
the spirit of Christmas
within a child somewhere. And anytime Santa kind of looks, it just gets worse for him because he always sees the worst in it. Similar things when they're staring through that little viewfinder in the remake, and Mrs. Claus finds something really sweet and it just turns sour as soon as Santa Claus looks at it.
And I actually thought that was actually quite well done, though, the use of the viewfinder, and then as Santa sort of starts looking around for more, all he sees is unhappiness.
Yeah, I like the punks that are saying Santa sucks.
Yes. The only other music in the...
Yeah, exactly.
And then she brings in that bag of letters. She's so excited. Look at all these kids. They wrote to you. And he opens it, and it's like, the letters are depressing.
I liked how they had, the toy trade show among themselves. It's just all the elves doing a trade show for themselves. It's not open to the public. So there's, all these elves at this trade show selling these ideas to Santa Claus.
Yeah, they're all trying to sort of sell him the next big toy.
And honestly, when I was seeing them, I'm like, the Beegoths would be hot right now.
Yes, they would be. I thought it was funny. I like the fact that they did a great job of referencing back to stuff in the remake, right? Because there's that scene where he's lying in the bed and he just goes, Beegoths.
Yeah, it sounds silly to think this movie's only 12 years old, but the Beegoths would be hot right now.
They totally would be. That's the best part.
I love a goth elf.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I love me a goth elf.
Yeah. I like the way that this whole movie is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, right? Like Mythopolis.
Yeah.
Right, where there's and the whole ad for Mythopolis. It pokes fun at so much.
Yeah, basically the old folks' home for myths and gods. And
yeah.
He's like, that's where all our friends are. this old Hercules who's no longer muscular.
Yeah.
I mean, the original is obviously the more beloved. IMDb has it a 7.9 out of 10.
Really?
What?
Yeah, 7.9 out of 10, and a Rotten Tomatoes score of 90% critics score and 83% audience score. The remake, whew, well, critics didn't even want to review it on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is 57%, so it's a little more middling, but IMDb had it around a 3.8 out of 10.
Ooh.
Okay, look, out of the two, I enjoyed the 2006 one better than the original.
I
did not find that cartoon interesting at all.
I think I'm going to have to disagree with both of you. I'm sitting with the other guys. I'm sitting with the original on this one. I much prefer the original.
I still think those ratings are high. I think there's a little bit of Rankin Bass love there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely going to be that, because I mean, Rankin Bass was practically the image of our childhood.
Yes, and they were the Christmas Story studio.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
So there, I think there's a little bit of misplaced love there, maybe.
Well, they weren't just a Christmas studio. I mean, they made Thundercats.
Yes. but what I'm saying is they were, like, when you think of stop motion animated Christmas movies, those are the ones you think of.
Yeah, because I don't think anybody else did.
They were big in the 70s.
They were huge in
the 70s. Christmas stop motion animation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, having watched them, I'm like, there's so much that I found just kind of nauseating in the remake, that it's just, if everything's so...
Oh, absolutely. Because so it was totally, it was Hollywood, right?
It feels so forced. It feels like an ABC movie of the week, and it probably was.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, it was...
It's kind of weird, because I would have thought John Goodman would have been kind of past stuff like this in 2006.
He was in his slump right then.
He
did go through.
I think
one,
he
right?
liked being Santa Claus, because I mean, this is the first time I think he played him on film. But he was Santa Claus in Futurama. Well, a killer robot Santa Claus, but Santa Claus nonetheless. SpongeBob SquarePants, he was Santa Claus as well.
Chris Kattan really seemed to be enjoying that movie.
I guess
he seemed to really enjoy being in that movie. He seemed to be the only character in that,
I think he really enjoyed being
really
employed.
Enjoyed being
yes.
in that movie.
I think that being employed is probably what motivated him, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Made the most of it.
I'm gonna give you the best work I've got because I need it for my reel.
Yeah, I am going to be the most asshole-ish elf ever.
He does smarmy so well.
Yeah.
He really does.
He does overacting really, really well.
Yeah, that's the downfall of a lot of those SNL actors, though. For that type of sketch comedy, there's a lot of that overacting, and then it's really hard for him to break that habit.
But yep, misers. Loved him.
Yeah, misers is definitely, I think, my favorite bit of the film as well.
In both.
That song's going to stick in my head a couple
times. You know, it's weird, because, like, even though I really liked him in the remake version, I didn't think it was very well executed, just... I'm like, hey, you guys cast this well, and it's just, it's silly fun.
But it was fun.
I didn't think it looked good.
Shoot the little fireballs, and then he'd shoot like the icicles, and you know,
yeah.
And then they have the little boxing match and stuff. Ah, it was cool. Sibling rivalry.
I thought it was this. It's a shame that they didn't do the vixen getting sick in a warm climate story, but I guess you can't really do that if you're using real reindeer.
They hinted at it, but it wasn't.
Yeah. There was a small hint at it, for sure. Like, oh, we'll get him in the house where there's air conditioning and stuff that.
Yeah, so they acknowledge that she would be uncomfortable, for sure.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, if you're two elves, why do you take the smallest flying reindeer? No wonder it was tired and exhausted.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ethan Suplee's not a little elf either.
Like, these are horribly dumb elves.
Yes, and they were supposed to be.
No wonder they were the ones that just fed the reindeer. Yeah, we can't trust you to make shit.
But they were so much fun. I'm sorry, I love the arcade scene.
The arcade was fun because it was, we can associate. We've all been to one of those. Remember going to these arcade places and getting the tickets for the prizes and whatnot. And, you know, I didn't do the DDR or whatever. But it was, like, those were fun things to do when... arcades were still around.
It was fun to watch them. I'm sorry, I love Ethan Suplee, so you could stick him in a movie and I'm okay. I'm happy.
Well, and I love the comment when they're turning in the tickets. It's like, for all those tickets you get a yo-yo.
And it's exactly like it really was. Is you could have 600-700 tickets, and you're like, oh yeah, get an eraser.
Yeah, plastic comb.
Yeah. That's all you get.
A weird novelty comb.
Your fun is playing the games. You don't need no prizes.
Then what's the point of the tickets? What's the point?
And I think that's why those places don't really exist in very many places.
Arcades?
Anymore.
Yeah.
Although apparently they're becoming a very popular adult thing.
Right? Yes.
We've got a couple places like that here in Calgary where there's the
Rec Room just right down from the hill from me here, actually.
Shanks used to have video games in them, too.
Yeah, and
we just go and relive our childhood.
It's a bar with arcade games, and they've got VR setups, and yeah, it's quite something, apparently.
I haven't been in because I've heard it's horribly expensive.
I haven't been either.
Yeah. Yeah, something like $30 for 30 minutes or something like that.
I'm fine. What? I have a PS4.
Yeah.
I have a PS4.
Well, let's talk about Iggy here.
Yes, let's talk about Iggy.
Because there's a lot going on with Iggy. Like I said, in the original, he was just the son of the townsfolk and good parents who actually believed in Santa Claus, or at least told them their son that they believed in Santa Claus because he felt he was too old to believe in Santa Claus. Until he started witnessing some stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see a flying reindeer, you start believing in shit.
Yeah. And Or
people think you're crazy.
Yeah. I like how he rationalized the first few things that he witnessed.
Yeah.
Right? It isn't until he sees Vixen fly that he's like, okay, believe you. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, he had very supportive parents in trying to keep that magic alive of Christmas.
Yes.
I mean, he's a good kid for the most part.
He really is. And even in the remake, his mom still, I mean, of all the characters in the movie, she's the only one who really seems to have any spirit at all.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's that wonderful, I'm going to say wonderful scene where they're in the kitchen and he says, when he tells his mom he doesn't believe in Santa Claus, and she goes, well, when did you stop believing in him? Mm-hmm. And she has that wonderful moment where she says, well, I think I do. I think I do still believe in Santa Claus in my own way.
Yeah. And that was a line I liked in both films, is because that's kind of how I feel about Christmas. Yeah. You know, you outgrow the idea of Santa Claus. You know, when you think about the spirit of what Christmas is about, that's embodied by Santa Claus.
Yes.
This kind of cartoon character that's changed from its mythology, but thank you, Coca-Cola.
Yes. Yeah. I think that was the message that was there. It's like, you don't have to believe in Santa as a person, but you certainly should believe in that magic that he represents.
Yeah.
Well, I still leave cookies and milk out on Christmas Eve, but they have to be the cookies have to be the ones that Sam likes. I don't know why, whatever. But I still leave them out.
Yeah, they were the same in my family where they'd leave the milk and cookies out. And I have a feeling they just wound up in the packages again. We got to eat them later. But
I think I kind of started having suspicions when I was probably 11 or 12 and my dad started requesting that I leave a glass of rye out for Santa instead of milk.
That's a tip off. Yeah, that's a tip off.
Yeah, it was kind of... Really?
Okay. You know, I don't know if, because neither of my parents were milk drinkers per se, but I guess they either stomached it or poured it back in the carton.
Did you grow up leaving out milk and cookies?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think my dad went through that extra mile. Somebody did, because they'd get some bells and go outside our window and start shaking.
That's awesome.
That is really awesome.
Every Christmas, I'd hear the bells outside my window, and you know, I could still hear my parents up with the TV and stuff. So I always thought they were inside. So I just am like, oh,
that is totally cool.
That was great.
Awesome,
Kudos to your parents. That's amazing.
Yeah, my parents are cool. Except Santa Claus had the same handwriting as my mother. That's what tipped me off.
See, little tip offs.
Yeah, you reach that age where you recognize the similarities and go, yeah, something's fishy here.
Yeah.
Wait, did you grow up believing in Santa Claus?
Oh, for sure. I don't remember exactly when I sort of realized that Santa was a figure rather than an actual person, but yeah, probably 8 or 9, maybe 10.
I don't know. I don't think anyone ever stops believing. They just kind of put it away, but they don't ever stop.
Yeah, I don't think I can pinpoint exactly when it happened, but...
I think for like most kids, it was probably ruined for me by another kid at school.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, and I have a twin brother, right? So, you know, we'd confer about these things. You know, it's weird that Santa's got our same handwriting as my mom.
We'd confer.
Yeah. What do you think? Yeah, I think this is all a scam.
Yeah. And I probably ruined it for my brother because I'm like that sometimes.
I think Skylar was ruined when I remember one year he wrote Santa Claus a letter and he wanted the original version of The Bride of Frankenstein. So I special ordered it, came in, and I believe I put it in my closet before Christmas, and Skylar found it. Didn't say anything, mm-hmm. but received it from Santa Claus for Christmas, and then finally admitted to me, I saw that movie in your closet. I knew he had it before Christmas. There is no Santa Claus. I'm like, dang. I wanted you to believe until you were like, you know, forever.
Oh, yeah. Once we started having our doubts, then we started looking.
Yeah.
We found all the hidey holes.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what? I only had one year where I was actually inclined to snoop. I was never really inclined to snoop.
You know, me neither.
Oh, we were big snoops.
My sisters were horrible for that, but no.
We were terrible for it. We were totally terrible for it. Thankfully, my parents don't listen to my podcast.
Yeah.
I like the surprise.
I think that's what it is that when I ruined the surprise myself that one year, I'm like, well, that sucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? It's like I knew what I was getting. There's no surprise. I didn't get the pleasure of finding out what people.
There was always stuff like I couldn't find, so there was always something. Yeah. But it was a case of like, oh, I'm really excited to get that thing.
Yeah. You know?
Okay. I want to go back to a moment in the remake here where Iggy is trying to bail out Vixen.
Mm-hmm. Smart kid.
In the original, Santa's the one that bails him out. But meanwhile, Jingle and Jangle are on this big mission to make it snow in exchange so they could get Vixen out, not knowing that Santa came and bailed him out and took him home. So this is a whole pointless endeavor of theirs, but we wouldn't have had the great miser scene otherwise. That's in true. This one, Iggy kind of uses his I'm the son of the mayor bit and says, hey, less paperwork. And then the guy lifts up his shirt.
Oh my God.
He says, life's too short for paperwork, tattooed
on his very large belly.
I'm like, that's some serious dedication to laziness.
Yes, it is. Well, that whole scene, even in 2006, you're like, holy inappropriate scene for a family movie. Right? Right from start to finish.
You're stripping down for a child.
And drinking beer. Right? You and offer the child a beer.
Didn't he offer a child a beer?
Offered Iggy the beer. He doesn't take
it. Iggy's a good kid.
And then chucks it into this big...
Chugs it and then chucks it.
Yeah, hucks it over his shoulder with great ease and practice as it lands on top of the garbage can full of crushed cans.
Yeah, and Iggy even makes a comment about drinking on the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horribly inappropriate. I mean, there's a couple other scenes that are kind of suggestive. I love this scene with Ethan Suplee and, oh, what's the name of the goddess that she plays? I've forgotten now.
Oh, Winnie's. The gym teacher.
Yes.
There.
Oh.
She was awesome.
Artemis.
Artemis, that's right. Yeah,
the goddess. You're a goddess. She's like, can't you tell?
Yeah. Yeah, she was totally channeling Melissa McCarthy in that scene.
Yeah, it was
right?
Funny.
Like, I was watching, I see Melissa McCarthy. Right? But yeah, she was fun. Like, just from start to finish, I wish we had gotten to see her at the end, at the summer thing, at the end of the movie, because there was this sort of flirtiness that happened, and then it went nowhere.
Yeah,
but I would have liked to see that come to fruition at the end of the movie.
Yeah, although I thought it was weird that Captain Lazy wound up having a booth at the Winter Festival in the South Town. Like, for a guy who's really lazy, he's doing extra work.
Yes,
promoting his animal control business.
I'm not sure what he was.
I'm like,
doing.
What are you even doing there?
I don't know why he was there. I think it was just like they're trying to get familiar faces in the crowd for that final
familiar
scene.
Faces and the people they're already paying to be actors rather than extras. So
yeah.
It made it. I don't know. They kind of made it feel as though the town was smaller than it really was. I mean, this town was supposed to be in Southern California. Is that correct?
I don't think they actually say. But I mean, it's somewhere warm where it doesn't snow. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it was definitely the south. It was just South Town. Assume that southern states, right?
Yeah, I mean the way Harvey Firestein says it, it sounds like it's like deep south.
Yes, yeah, yeah, because yeah, Firestein sounds very southern all the way through it.
Yeah,
but he does say that the snow is falling on the, or my son is building a snowman over there by that palm tree while it was snowing. So I'm going palm tree. I'm thinking maybe Florida.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. You're probably thinking, yeah, probably is somewhere in like Southern California.
Yeah. Or Florida, as I said. Yeah.
Or Florida, yeah.
But yeah, definitely one of those palm tree states.
I was in Florida because, you know, there would have been all
Are
sorts
palm
of
trees not
craziness and crime going
no,
on.
Oh.
All kinds of more weirdness than there already was.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been far weirder movie if it were in Florida. Yeah. They would have been like, flying reindeer, give me some more flaca.
I don't know. I didn't hate it. I don't want to say I liked it, but I didn't hate the movie. Like I said, I thought the acting was good in it. It had some comedic moments in it.
The scene where with the sled spray painted and jacked up on blocks.
Yeah.
Come on. That was funny.
That's hilarious.
Actually, it probably was California. Yeah. They parked it somewhere in Watts.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. It was funny. I mean, the acting didn't suck. I thought it was all right.
Okay, well, let's, I couldn't find a trailer for the remake, so I'm going to run a Carol Kane moment where Santa Claus is trying to negotiate with the misers from the remake, and Mama Nature comes and lays a smackdown on her kids.
Stop! Santa Claus!
If we knew you wanted to see the fight, we would have sent you a ticket.
I'm no kisser.
Listen, you bozos. Two of my elves disappeared into the divide and haven't been heard from since. What do you know about it?
Elves?
Divide? Sorry, Santa. Round two.
I have to summon the big guns. Mother Nature.
Oh, I sense some stormy seas. Tell Mother Nature, what's troubling you?
Two of my elves, Jingle and Jangle, haven't been heard from since they tried to cross the divide.
Oh, but surely one of my sons must have seen them.
I spoke to them, but they didn't seem to be of much help.
So they gave you a hard time, did they?
I'm sure they didn't mean to.
Oh, you stated. Nasty little boys, both of them. But don't worry, I'll get you the skinny. Oh, yoo-hoo.
I'll see nothing.
And I didn't see anything.
Do not lie to Mother Nature. It makes her ever so sour.
Well, I vaguely remember seeing something.
I vaguely remember you shooting at them.
La, 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 la.
Hey, miser!
Well, your elves were off course. We cannot be responsible for collateral damage when we are fighting.
What happened to them?
Tell Santa what you know!
We did find this.
South. Oh, that's a relief. Mother Nature, I can't thank you enough. Jingle and Jangle, they mean well, but well, they're like children.
I know all about idiot children.
Mother Nature, I think I'm dying. I can't tell you. It is a pleasure to meet you. My name's Sparky the Elf.
Oh, you know, most people bow when they meet Mother Nature.
Come on, herniated disc.
Oh.
Don't worry, everybody, I'm fine.
Oh, good. As for you two boys, I have some manure that needs manipulating. So unless you two boys want the job, behave.
Yes, Mommy.
Good luck on your elf quest, Santa. And Merry Christmas. I know I'm not supposed to play favorites, but it is my most cherished season.
seems like you best. I knew it.
Round three.
All right, well, that was the fun miser bit as they're sitting in the boxing ring.
Yeah, that was... the bits with the misers and the bits with actually Jingle and Jangle were probably the most fun.
Mm-hmm. Of the movie, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I don't know. There were times where I wasn't sure if I was digging the remakes of Jingle and Jangle because, I don't know, they were coming off a little... All the elves and stuff, they were coming off too modern for me.
They weren't very elf-like.
No.
Because they're human-sized...
Oh, they were just casting people that were 5-something. Yeah. It would have been short next to John Goodman.
Yeah, which is just what everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Well, when they were getting, remember when they landed and they had to put hats on to cover their ears and get dressed into something different.
Modern clothes, yeah.
Yeah, into more modern clothes. And Ethan Suplee puts on he's got green pants and a red sweater. So he still looks kind of Christmassy. Mm-hmm. And he says, here, put some of these on. He looks over at the other elf, and he's dressed in this white California thug,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of like the hip-hop wearer, yeah.
There are a few things that just kind of are ugh. Yeah. That was one of them.
Yeah, the whole...
Although I'm he's styling.
Yeah. Yeah. But they also fed stereotypes.
Yeah.
Right? Very, very, very much.
And when they do stuff like that in a movie, any movie, I just kind of tend to roll my eyes.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of Eddie Griffin's thing.
Yeah.
Right, is feeding this... stereotype, right? I mean, mm-hmm. when you consider sort of especially his early appearances in movies, he plays that stereotypical character.
I have to admit, I really liked in both movies. We're just trying to walk Vixen around like he's a dog on a leash.
Yes,
they actually get pulled over and ticketed for it.
The original one, they just put socks on his ears, right?
Yeah,
over his antlers. Yeah.
I shook my head when I watched it, and
I thought it was cute in both movies.
Well, yeah, Vixen was really tiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've ever seen a full size reindeer, they are big.
Yeah,
right. And this little reindeer, I'm not even sure if it was actually a reindeer or some sort of subspecies, but it was tiny.
Subspecies.
Maybe it was a baby reindeer. I mean, they all got to start out. They don't come out that big. So.
Right. Yeah.
Well, no, I know, but I mean, she had a full set of antlers, right? So, and usually you don't get those until you're...
Run to the litter.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And they looked like bona fide antlers.
They did.
They did.
They looked pretty
solid. That's why I think that she was legitimately...
Bill Murray didn't come and, staple them to his hand.
No. I am no one of that.
God, I hope not.
What I'm saying is she was cute. She was tiny. That
yes,
was the whole point of what I was saying.
She was adorable. But she didn't look anything like a puppy dog in the second movie.
No.
No.
It's harder to pull off with a real live mammal.
Yeah, but they still had it on a leash.
Yes, which I did love, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing when you have like a real animal that you can still see personality.
Yeah.
Right? Because Vixen had a personality.
Yeah.
Right? It's it's really fun to see that because it just shows how smart animals are.
Yeah.
And also how much dedication there is to that art of training an animal to have a personality.
The flying scenes show that personality. Yeah, I thought the flying scenes looked pretty good. Obviously, they weren't using the real animal to do that.
I was going to say, how sure are you that Vixen wasn't CGI right from the beginning?
I'm not sure, but I would have thought that would have been fairly expensive.
Yeah.
And that for TV, it probably would have been a bit obvious.
Yeah, especially in 2006. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they've made a lot of advancements, but typically for most CGI, you can still tell. There's always that little tell.
Yeah. Right. In fact, I don't think if they use CGI outside of compositing, I'd be surprised because, even the flying scenes, I think were probably rather than CG were probably some puppet thing.
Modeling and
I mean, it was fairly smooth for what it was. But.
Oh, for sure. There's one scene where you could tell they'd really sort of copped out or cheaped out or whatever you want to call it, where Santa and Jingle and Jangle are coming back on the sled,
mm-hmm.
and they only show the back half of the sled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? basically you can see Santa at the far right of the screen and the back of the sled at the right, and I'm like, oh yeah, you can tell that's a stage. Right, and then it gets pulled forward. I'm like, yeah, that's probably that was probably the cheapest moment in the whole movie, actually.
Yeah. Must hide, not fully constructed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's save some money. We don't have to show any reindeer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
we can only afford two.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Can we talk about John Goodman's beard in this?
Sure.
Yeah, I looked like a fan. It was awesome, though.
Yeah, he is a great Santa Claus. I mean, he. I mean, especially back then when he was sort of at his larger weight.
I'm sure he was padded too.
Actually, in 2006, that's when he was probably nearing his largest. I think he was pretty. I don't think he would have needed much padding if he had any.
Now he's all skinny if you see him on the Connors.
Yeah, he doesn't look good on him.
Well, we're just so used to
seeing him all filled out.
Yeah.
But it kind of makes him look sick a bit.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it doesn't take
away. But at least it makes sense. Like, that weight loss for his character on the Connors makes sense because story-wise, they've killed off Roseanne, so he's all depressed and not eating or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, hey.
Well, he had a heart attack in the original Roseanne, right? So obviously he had to change his lifestyle.
Yeah. So again, it all plays within the storyline of that show instead of, you know, Roseanne being fired for saying something stupid.
Yes.
But John Goodman, I mean, anything that he's in, he just falls into the role.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's who he is.
And we've talked about him a few times because he was in Arachnophobia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was also in Judd.
Yeah, that short scene in Chud, but probably my favorite bit in Chud.
Yes.
You know, even when one of his first roles and he's still chewing up scenery.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Owning the time he gets. And that's, I mean, even when he's phoning it in like he was with this movie, it's still
like kind of like, he's just surly Santa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when he's kind of come around, he's still kind of surly.
He's still kind of surly. Yeah. I love the scene where he sees Sparky in the superhero Santa costume and can't stop laughing.
Just demoralizing. I thought he was going to rip him a new one and he just can't stop laughing. Yeah.
Well, because he did. He looked ridiculous, right? He's like, what's with the beard?
What's with that? Yeah.
And that's the thing about this remake that I think, because I didn't laugh out loud at all at the original one. I mean, it was a shorter story.
Definitely meant for kids.
Definitely meant for kids. More message based kind of story, right? Where this one was also designed for entertainment for everybody, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even with Eddie Griffin making his constant Dr. Laura references,
what would Dr. Laura say?
There's a lot of pop culture reference that is a little dated now.
Did you get the feeling like Mrs. Claus was some sort of shadow figure behind the corporation? Like, half the time I'm like, is she really working for Santa or is she just money driven with the elves? Like, I felt like we need to get him back on track because we have a corporation to run. Half the time, I actually thought she wasn't a very nice person and was just hiding her greedy nature, which would have been very Delta Burke. But,
I never thought of that, but now that you pointed out.
It felt like it half the time, the way her scenes ran, I'm like, does she care? And then other times, oh, yeah, she does.
Yeah, that would have been.
I was questioning her at times, her motives.
And I think that would have been something very interesting to add to it. I think maybe tone down the whole Sparky story and instead have it be Mrs. Claus.
Yeah, I felt like Sparky still answered to her.
Yeah, I that would have played really well with the original story where she's like excited to be Santa.
Yeah, because she yells at Sparky, get him back.
Yeah.
You know? It doesn't feel like the same way in the sweet nature of like, go find the proof of belief in Santa Claus. It was just get it done.
Yes.
Right. We need our corporate figure back in the front of this.
And I think that would have been a really good way to make that Sparky, the whole corporate storyline work better.
Yeah.
Right. Because, and then it would, again, like I said, it would have tied back to the original a little bit better where she's like all excited to be Santa, right? Where this is where she actually is Santa.
And then Santa's just the figurehead?
And then Santa's just the delivery system, like he kept saying, right?
Yeah.
Right? I'm shocked. Thanks, guys.
Santa's just another delivery person for Amazon.
He's like this major player.
Yeah, UPS, honestly.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just the UPS dude.
Could you see him in those little brown shorts?
Poor Santa Claus.
Stop. It's
gonna be put out of work by drones.
You know what? I'd be interested to see what they would do with it 12 years later. Actually, like now, because like, I mean, we had the 2006, which was 30 some years later. Right now, we could do another 12 years later and see how they approach the way we look at things. Now we have cell phones that we take with us everywhere, and tablets where that disconnect is even larger.
Yeah,
right? So you could do something really interesting.
Yeah, they were still using flip phones in that movie.
Yes, they were. Yeah, yeah, they were. So I think, yeah, that would it'd be kind of fun to see what they would do with it now.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's still the story itself is still
valid. We're not inviting
valid.
You to do so, though.
Yeah. No, because we never invite you to do remakes. But yeah, I think that it's the story itself is still valid. Remember that Christmas isn't about the stuff you buy. It's not about the stuff that you can touch and see. It's about the feeling that you should be getting from the season.
Yeah. Right?
And that's the story of both of them.
Yeah. So the meaning is the same.
Yeah.
Understandable.
All right, anything else you want to touch on about this weird TV special?
These train wrecks of stories?
Well, you know, I mean, they were there for kids. I mean,
still like the Rankin-Bass one. I'm sorry.
You know what? I don't dislike it. I just say it's the weakest of the Rankin-Bass that I remember. Like, watching it, I'm like, wow, does not stand up to everything else that I've
ever seen. Yeah, I can see why it's not as revered. You think about that one in particular, it's just the Heat Miser song and the Snow Miser song are the ones that immediately you reminisce about and like come up and you can pick up the song right away.
Yeah, and they're so visually interesting.
Yeah, right? But like I said, I'd forgotten most of it.
Yeah, as had I. Like, I don't even know if
and
I've actually seen it.
It wasn't one of the more heavily run specials. I mean, there's a lot of Rankin-Bass ones. And you'd think the way they run them these days, it was like Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph were the only ones that ever got made.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't even
and
see...
there's like seven or eight Rudolph movies.
Yeah, there's more of them.
Yeah.
And the Island of Lost Toys you hardly ever see, even though it's one of the best ones.
Yeah, mine, my favorite, I think, was Rudolph in July.
That was an actual movie, Rudolph in July.
Yeah, Christmas in July. I really like that one.
Yeah, which plays off the...
Because
one of the two movies referenced having Christmas in the summer.
Frosty has to... has trouble staying frozen during it.
Surprisingly.
I think I liked it because it was like a team-up movie.
Yeah.
Where you had Frosty and Rudolph together in one movie.
That'd be fun, yeah. I'm sure I've seen all of the Rankin-Basses at one point or another in my life, but some...
I still don't think I've seen the Monster Mash one, like where they did a puppet version of a Halloween special. It wasn't like any of the Christmas characters, so they had all the monsters and stuff. I'm aware of it, and I might have seen it once, but I don't know. I'm going to have to go pop it on YouTube or something and see if I can find some clips of it, because I don't think I've actually seen it all the way through.
I can be honest, didn't they say I don't recall ever seeing it, and I certainly don't recall its existence, so mm-hmm. Now it's going to be on my list of things to find and check out then.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's a lot of Rankin-Bass, like you said, there's a lot of Rudolphs, and there's some really classic stories there, and, mm-hmm. and this one got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, and they're still, they were responsible for a lot of your favorite cartoons as well.
Yeah. I enjoyed them both. I enjoyed the live action just because it had more fun with the subject matter.
Okay, fair. Yeah, I think I like the innocence of the original a lot more.
It's hard for me to go back and watch the original Christmas cartoons that I grew up with as a kid and to go back and feel nostalgic and enjoy them the way I did when I was 7, 8 mm-hmm. years old. And I think that's why I was, you know, but that's me. That's just me. I'm not saying that the one from the 70s sucked or that it wasn't good or anything. I just kind of like the live action better.
Yeah, totally fair.
Appreciate the movie.
Okay. Well, we're split decision here. I guess I'm outnumbered.
But let me be honest, I didn't really like either of them.
Okay. Very split
decision. I think I preferred the live action more to the cartoon, but no, I never
both
see them again,
watches
I'll
be were
fine.
A little arduous, to be honest.
yeah,
but yeah, the sense of fun that they brought.
I never want to see the remake again.
Oh, I don't think I ever want that either. Like, it's definitely not on my must watch Christmas movie list.
No,
but it was fun to see it and see what they did with it. And there's some moments in it where I'm like, oh wow, that's holy padding. But for the most part, yeah,
they had trouble filling it out. And especially, I mean, it probably wouldn't have been as bad if they kept all the musical numbers in there, but they didn't. So it just was even worse because they had to fill in even more time.
That's true.
In that plot.
That's true. And yeah, but I mean, really, do you really want to hear John Goodman sing?
No. Actually, now that you mention it.
We heard Harvey Fierstein saying John Goodman wouldn't have been that bad.
That's a good point. Good point.
Good point.
It's almost like I set you up for that.
Could have made it easier. At least Michael McKean's got experience.
Yes.
I knew he was going to be fine.
Yeah, I was actually interested to see how Harvey sounded.
Because he's already got that strange voice to begin with. I had to look it up. He's got some sort of overgrown thing in his throat. It actually kind of gives him a double voice. That's why he sounds the way he sounds.
It's interesting. He sounds like like one of those ladies who's been smoking for 90 years. And
now apparently it's something natural.
Yeah, but that added to his character.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Perfectly cast.
Yeah, it works for that particular character for sure.
Yeah. And I love the fact that they made him, of the two, they made him look almost exactly like the animated one.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they made him look almost exactly like Guy Fieri. I was going to go, oh, did you see that too? I thought I was the only one that I...
I wonder if maybe that's where Guy Fieri gets his look.
Guy Fieri is the heat miser. Just
like, seriously,
wears
though.
The sunglasses on the back of his fiery hair.
Think about it.
Long lost son? What have you been up to, heat miser?
Diners, Dives, and Drive-Ins.
Yeah, makes you wonder who he got with.
Well, I mean, he had quite the gallery there. So
that's true. I mean, he had a lot of dancing girls there.
Yeah, that was something that we talked about too. While we were watching it, I mean, Val always brings up these points while we're watching about the production.
Then we get here and I'm like, oh, what, the dancing girls?
Yeah, the whole production of the way it looks, right?
It's funny, like, when I see this, like, when I say Santa Claus has got this big corporation and having this toy fair for himself, in the original, he's singing a song about himself.
Yes.
And the misers here are having a little war when we first see them, and then they're having a boxing match with dancing girls and for themselves, like this big production for themselves.
Essentially, yeah.
Well,
talk about wasting time.
How come the heat miser, I mean, how come he got the cute blonde chicks and then the ice guy got the brunettes? Like, shouldn't it have been switched? Like, blondes?
Blondes were icy.
I would have thought for sure, like, the heat miser would have had nothing but redheads.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, that was really weird.
But redheads sunburn really
easy. A little disappointing.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, good point. You're onto something they don't there. Actually get a tan, they freckle.
Yeah.
That does bring me back to a point that I wanted to make about the tokenness of Eddie Griffin's role.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's only two people of color in this whole movie. There's the officer and Eddie Griffin. Right? And I mean, I appreciate what they were trying to do, even in 2006, but they could have, I mean, there was an opportunity there to really diversify everything. Because if they're going to have one elf of color, right, they could have had more. At least as extras, right, to fill it out a little bit.
Oh, it was very South Town.
Yes, it was very, very South Town.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Do you mean like, damn, that movie was white? Is that what you mean?
That's essentially what I was saying, yes.
Sorry, I had to say it. I don't mean to offend anybody. I don't know.
But yeah, that's essentially what I was saying is we're seeing less of the token character of race.
Yeah, right? And it just shows you how much film has progressed in the last 10 years.
Yes. That's where I was ultimately going.
Well, I think in the original cartoon, they were pretty much all white, were they not?
They were. It was 1974, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, there was...
Well, no. Snow Miser was blue.
Oh, my bad.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, diversity wasn't... It was definitely not as pertinent or prevalent in the 70s.
No.
It was pretty much non-existent.
Yeah.
Right? And it does show the progression. They're at least acknowledging that there needs to be some diversity in film by 2006, but it doesn't compare, and it's very jarring to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Watching now, going back to these movies where they include characters of race, but it's not really...
Imagine Eddie Griffith in the 74... It would have been like Shaft. Shaft is an elf.
Which would have been really fucking cool.
Right?
Yeah. Could change the whole thing.
Yeah. But yes, I did want to bring that up because that was the one thing that every time I was on the screen, I'm like, oh, this is the diversity casting. right? It didn't offend me, but at the same time, it was very noticeable.
Yeah, I mean, you just could have just filled out the town with a multicultural town of extras. I don't think that would have cost you anything, and at least it would have felt like a richer, fuller town. But well,
and then Eddie Griffin wouldn't have felt so out of place in the movie either.
Yeah.
Right? That was the thing, is he felt out of place because there were so few people of color in the movie.
Yeah, and I mean, no. And when one of them's the cop who's a dick...
Yeah,
so
he felt out of place because his pointy ears.
Yes,
yeah.
Well, there's that too, right? No, I'm not talking about the character. I'm talking about the casting. yeah, the character felt out of place because of his pointy ears, for sure. You are absolutely right because he pointed out there's actually that great scene where he
have ear racists in my my podcasts.
But
when earballs are a very important part of our show.
They really are. They really are. But there's this great scene where Eddie Griffin chases after this hot girl, and he comes back, and he's been shut down, and he just points at the tips of his ears. Right? Mm. And so I thought that was really subtle, because I don't even know how many people have noticed it. But yeah, he's got a sad look on his face, and just points at his head.
He's got some lobes.
Yeah.
Right? Big lobes.
But yeah, but he's basically pointing out that he got shut down because of his ear tips, not because of... Right? So, I mean, there's some nods in there, right?
I don't like this elf profiling.
No.
Sam started it.
I didn't start it. I'm bringing attention to it.
Sam, you got to rewind a little bit and realize that Sam is the one that
brought
this subject.
I am social justice warrioring for elves.
Well done.
Elves' rights.
Well done.
Less hours, more pay. Less hours, more pay. All of that, you know? Casual Fridays.
Yeah, this poor race of pointy-eared elves is essentially slaves to a giant white man.
Yes, and there's a comment regardless about that too. Remember, color. Sparky says, Sparky was my slave name.
Yeah, right? He does.
He totally does.
So then maybe there was some subtext there.
There totally was.
Sparky was my slave name.
He actually says
I'm
it
extreme outright. Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've talked about elf racism before.
I think we have, yeah.
When we did the previous Santa Claus movie.
Yeah, I think we did in Santa Claus the movie. I think we did, yeah. Yeah, we feel for the elves.
We're pro-elf.
We're pro-elf, yeah. We're pro-everybody unless you're an asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much.
Exactly. Like, you can't just say pro-elf because you got to think about, you know, other people in the
We're not exclusionist.
No.
Unless you're an asshole.
That's right.
Yeah, don't be putting reindeers in the pound and you're fine by me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, sorry, that I tangented off on you there, but...
But it went into an amazing place. I'm sure Trish is missing it. She's like, God damn it.
Yes. I that was my whole intent, was to make her sorry she didn't make it today.
Well done. Well done.
All right. Well, I think we've done it with the year without a Santa Claus. It was a weird one. I'm sorry. We're running out of Christmas remakes to do, and honestly, we just didn't want to watch four Miracle on 34th Street.
No, not this year.
It's okay, though.
We might do it eventually.
It's fun. I mean, yeah, some of these movies have to be done.
We watched a bazillion Christmas carols last year, so...
So this year was our light year.
Yeah, we took it light this year. We got another Christmas special for you next week, and that's our final week of regular episodes for the year and for the season, and we'll take the next 2 weeks off. There might be a little something in the dropping on Christmas and New Year's Day, but we'll be back with full episodes again the second week of January. Because I think, drop days are Christmas Day and January 1st. So we'll be doing we'll drop a full episode the Tuesday after. So
yeah, and make sure that you download our episodes and play us for your family at Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's your Christmas present.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you want to give us a good Christmas present, spread the word. Tell everybody where to find this show. We're a ton of different places. I mean, you already know we're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play. And find us on Radio Public. We get a little bit of kickback from just you listening to the show. You don't have to do anything. You're not having to pay for Radio Public. Just go in there, download the app on Android and iOS, and hit subscribe.
Yep.
Follow Invasion of the Remake, and we'll get a little extra just for you listening to the show.
Yeah, so do something you're already doing.
Yeah, and that's a great Christmas present you can send our way. It'll go towards our hosting fees and whatnot. Right now it's accumulating fairly slowly, won't even cover a month of hosting, and it'll take probably 5 months for us to get that much. Yes. But that's okay. You know, every little bit helps. If you want to listen to us on all your other favorite podcast apps, we are still in a ton of different places. We're even on
freaking YouTube.
So go ahead, subscribe, and tell your friends to subscribe to us. And we drop every Tuesday, except for, you know, a couple weeks around the holidays. And even then, there's still something dropping. We'll be back in the new year with a whole bunch of cool stuff. But next week, we're going to have some fun. We're going to remake maybe a forgotten Christmas classic. I don't know. But
is it classic if it's forgotten?
I don't know. A forgotten Christmas movie, but it should be a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this.
I can't wait to do this one. So we'll catch you next week. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I'm Valerie. And thank you so much for having me here, Invasion of the Remake. And Jay, it was wonderful. And before I say goodbye, I just want to wish everybody a safe and happy holiday.
Oh, how nice was that?
That was nice.
Because I don't think we've ever done that.
You know what, though?
Yes, we do.
We do. I don't get to be on here that often. I just want to make sure that everybody's going to have a great season.
Thanks, Val.
Thanks for having me.
And we are out of here.
Isn't it wonderful, dear? When we told all the children you needed a holiday, they all agreed. So this year, they brought Christmas to you.
A holiday? Nonsense! Well, why is everybody standing around? There's work to be done. Load up the sleigh. Harness the team. Fetch my coat.
But what about your gout?
And the crick in your spine.
And your aches?
Pooh! My back feels fine. Never felt younger. Never felt stronger. Haven't got a symptom any longer. Yay! Now pile all those toys inside. There's no time to waste. Tonight, we ride! Yay! Yay!